Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Freaks and Geeks. Boy, oh boy, did we have an amazing show for you tonight. I cannot even wait. Well, my name is April, and I have with me my two magical maniacs, Carrie and Chris.
Oh, hello, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good to be back. You know what I'm saying? Just kicking it.
Oh, my God. Christopher, please. Please stop.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all here. You know what I'm saying?
Insulting tones week after week.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. But wait, there is actually more tonight.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, so tonight we have a very, very special guest, a dear friend of mine, Stacy, who is joining us.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
So Stacy is joining us tonight to give us a very special Roman Catholic perspective on our topic, which is...
Drumroll.
Christopher? Earth to Christopher. Fine, you lost your chance. It's demons.
No,
nope,
it's
nope. Been... Too late. Nope.
I think we're going to take his gold star back.
Taking that gold star right back.
Blog Talk betrayed me.
Did it or did you betray you?
Don't lie.
It muted me. It can't
right?
handle
it. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, do you know that I can see you in the studio? I mean, I just want to make sure that you know I can see you.
I can see you.
So anyway, like I said before, Chris just trampled all over the script for tonight. We are going to have an awesome show tonight, guys and dolls. We are going to go through a very small chunk of demons. There are thousands of them in all reality. So we picked out some of our favorites. We're going to go through their origins, both from a Roman Catholic perspective.
That'll be for me.
And then from a generally spiritual / historical perspective. We'll also get into some brass tacks when it comes to hauntings and dispel some myths permeated by more popular investigators.
Although I do think it's important to point out that there is no one true expert in any of this stuff. This is literally a field of study, and there's no real way to prove that demons do or don't exist. They don't pay taxes. Not does that mean
well, it depends on your definition of that.
So easy tiger. We are gonna get into all things demonic right after the jump.
Hold me in here.
We'll be right back. Alrighty. So, before we start, I just have a couple of housekeeping things. First of all, I want to do a really quick plug for the old Book of Face. Please, please jump onto our Freaks and Geeks Facebook page and give us a like. We would like that a lot. See what I did there? Let us know what you liked about it. Yeah. Getting it. Let us know what you liked about tonight's show and what you didn't. We are equal opportunity conversationalists, and we are more than happy to talk about all manner of things freaky and geeky. Second thing, big surprise, we are doing a giveaway with one of our favorite shops, Purple Lotus. Purple Lotus creates wonderful self-care items and specializes in jewelry with intention, which is a concept that I love. Through the use of crystals imbued with power, love, harmony, etc., Purple Lotus creates timeless malas, bracelets, and lock jewels that resonate with whatever intention you wish to manifest. The owner is a really old friend of mine. She's a great gal, and she is just absolutely incredible. I'm super proud to know her. I'm proud to be doing this giveaway on our show. And so, to get a chance for a package from the Purple Lotus for all of your intentional, beautiful needs, please, please head on over to our Facebook page right after this show and throw a comment on the promo that we are going to post-haste. If you think your friend might like it, feel free to share. Hey, more love for everybody.
I've seen the jewelry, and it is out of this world.
Yeah, you know, busting at a reasonable price. That's what this is.
Oh, my God, Christopher.
I wish your Christopher had to walk.
Yeah, I think he's just wandering around in the ether somewhere, honestly. Well, without further ado, we got a packed show tonight. Let's go ahead and get into demons.
This is absolutely a topic I never thought I'd be talking about on a radio show.
Yeah, you know, April can attest to this. Demons scare me.
So I think that we need to establish a good baseline. What are demons?
So for me, being a Roman Catholic, the one place that I look to for, you know, to find out what the ground truth is and what the beliefs are in the church is the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And according to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, demons are angels that have blatantly chosen to disobey God. And the Catechism talks about this in a section called The Fall of Angels, where it states that behind the disobedient choice of our first parents lurks a seductive voice opposed to God, which makes them fall into death out of envy. Scripture and the church's tradition see in this being a fallen angel called Satan or the devil. The church teaches that Satan was at first a good angel made by God. The devil and the other demons were indeed created naturally good by God, but they became evil by their own doing. Scripture speaks of sin of these angels, and this fall consists in the free choice of these created spirits who radically and irrevocably rejected God and his reign. And we find a reflection of that rebellion in the tempter's words to our first parents, being Adam and Eve, "You will be like God." The devil has sinned from the very beginning, and he is a liar and the father of lies. So,
well, that is intriguing, considering that Mark Twain wrote, "But who prays for Satan, who in 18 centuries has had the common humanity to pray, or who has had common humanity to pray for one of the one sinner that needed it the most? Our one fellow and brother who needed a friend, yet had not a single one. The one sinner among us all who had the highest and clearest right to every Christian's daily and nightly prayers, for the plain and unassailable reason that his was the first and greatest need, he being among the sinners the supremest." So based on the Catechism, I hope I say that right. We should not pray for Satan, but and by extension, demons. Yes.
So I guess what you're asking is basically shouldn't we be praying for Satan and the demons? And I guess you could, but my question is, does Satan and the demons really want your prayers for the reasons to which you're kind of alluding to, which I think that, you know, basically for their salvation? And if you think about it, the Catechism also says that their whole beings, the angels, are servants and messengers of God. But they were first good angels and created naturally good, who became evil by their own doing, and then stress that by their own doing, the free will. So when we look further, the Catechism tells us we cannot be united with God unless we freely choose to love Him. Again, that free choice. But we cannot love God if we sin gravely against Him, against our neighbor, and against ourselves. He who does not love remains in death, and anyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. The Lord warns us that we shall be separated from Him if we fail to meet the serious needs of the poor and the little ones who are in His brethren. To die in mortal sin without repenting and accepting God's merciful love means remaining separated from Him forever by our own free choice. This state of definitive self-exclusion from communion with God and the blessed is called hell. So, of course, that applies to man, but if you think about it in terms of angels, the demons are the angels who freely turn their back on God and continue to do so. And, you know, we see the results. So the question is, do they really want your prayers to return in communion with God? I don't know the answer to that.
So what it sounds like to me is that if you pray for the demons, I had it in my mind and now it's going away. So if you are praying for the demons, you are then using your free will to in some way agree with what they do?
I don't know if I would go that far. I would just say that I think if you're basically praying for a being that potentially doesn't want your prayers.
I guess that's true. April, you still with us?
What did you say, Chris?
I was having a nice chit chat with Stacy about like what it sounded like to me as far as why nobody prays for demons. Although it might just be as people are scared of demons and they don't want to invite that, you know, evil upon themselves.
So my question is, can demons mortally sin? Is that possible since they are immortal?
Well, outside of Christianity, demons are regularly viewed as inhuman spirits with malicious intent, which can be where it gets really confusing for paranormal investigators. So if a person was nasty and mean in life, they may be equally or more nasty and mean in death. Lots of investigators will come across angry, violent entities and will immediately chalk it up to being a demon. But it's possible it could just be old angry Uncle Bob who was full of nastiness and vinegar and still is. The key here is to determine whether an entity has ever been human or not, and that's the hard part.
So how do we do that?
Well, generally it's something determined over time. The first step should be that homeowners keep a detailed journal of events, no matter what kind of haunting it is, and I do at our house. Investigators should make every effort to conduct EVP sessions, perhaps call in a demonologist if that becomes a suspicion. In many ways, it's the same as any normal investigation. At no time should an investigator ever seek to antagonize an already volatile spirit.
Yeah, that would be, that might be problematic. I don't think that if it's a really angry spirit, you want to piss it off.
For sure. Unlike some of the more popular investigators that you might see on TV, I will say that true demonic activity is highly unusual and usually the result of a few different factors. First, the demon was called. That could have been in the past, say a home that was previously the site of rituals, requesting the demon to come through or the opening of a portal. One of the demons we are going to talk about here in a little bit, Zozo, is known for coming through on Ouija boards. Secondly, the person being haunted is many times already spiritually vulnerable. That could be any sort of stressor or factor that weakens an individual, say a really bad breakup, can leave a person emotionally vulnerable. A ton of debt and stress can leave a person very susceptible to manipulation. Thirdly, you have to look at the history of the space. Many cases of demonic activity have occurred in spaces where something tragic or horrible has happened, such as the haunting of Bobby Mackey's in Wilder, Kentucky.
That place is crazy as shit.
Oh, yeah. Bobby Mackey's is a really interesting spot. It was the site of brutal murders, a slaughterhouse, cult activity, suicides, and, oh, yeah, a supposed portal to hell. So we should definitely do an episode on Bobby Mackey's, and, you know, we could maybe even travel there. Anybody good for that?
Yeah, don't even look at me. No, I'm not doing that.
Well, I mean, if there are if some TV shows that have done their episodes at Bobby Mackey's is to be believed, I'd say it's better to just leave well enough alone.
Well, but maybe we could just have Stacey with us and then
no.
Keep us safe.
No, that's never going to happen.
Well, I mean, they do have drinks there.
Yeah, no, so does 7-Eleven, not happening.
Well, fair enough. So basically, if you don't want a run-in with demons, make yourself spiritually strong in your beliefs, take care of yourself as a person, and try to avoid questionable places.
Yeah, so, I mean, and you have to remember that man is, I mean, kind of at a disadvantage from the jump when it comes to sin, regardless of whatever influence, and that's thanks to the original sin of Adam and Eve. But the Catechism does give us some hope when considering the power of Satan. The Catechism tells us that the power of Satan is nonetheless not infinite. He is only a creature, powerful from the fact that he is pure spirit, but still a creature. He cannot prevent the building up of God's reign. Although Satan may act in the world out of hatred for God and his kingdom in Christ, Jesus, and although his actions may cause grave injuries, and those grave injuries could be of a spiritual nature or indirectly even of a physical nature, to each man and to society. Hey, ghost. These actions are permitted by divine providence, which with strength and gentleness guides the human and cosmic history. It is a great mystery that providence should permit diabolical activity, but we know that in everything God works for good with those who love him. So, you know, the question comes like, you know, why would God let so much evil into the world? And, you know, why didn't he make the world so perfect that we wouldn't have these things? And so, you know, we look back at the Catechism and it says, you know, with infinite power, God could always create something better. But with infinite wisdom and goodness, God freely willed to create a world in a state of journeying. I find that really fascinating, toward its ultimate perfection. In God's plan, this process of becoming involves the appearance of certain beings and the disappearance of others, the existence of the more perfect alongside the less perfect, both constructive and destructive forces of nature. So that's kind of like the duality that we were talking about earlier. With physical good, there exists also physical evil as long as creation has not reached perfection. So angels and men, as intelligent and free creatures, have to journey toward their ultimate destinies by their free choice and preferential love. They can therefore go astray. Indeed, they have sinned. Thus has moral evil, incommensurably more harmful than physical evil, entered the world. God is in no way directly or indirectly the cause of moral evil. He permits it, however, because he respects the freedom of his creatures. And mysteriously knows how to derive good from it. And then it says, for Almighty God, because he is supremely good, would never allow any evil whatsoever to exist in his works if he were not so all-powerful and good as to cause good to emerge from evil itself. So, you know, it's important to remember that while evil exists in the world, we, you know, for me, I ultimately have to trust that God knows what he is doing.
What? I think there's something interesting in that if you don't have the bad side, then you can never really know what the good side is. Like, you have to have one to have the other kind of thing.
Well, and, you know, and that's, it's funny that you say that, Chris, too, because, like, that, you know, I remember, you know, growing up and going to Catholic school, and I remember I was in sixth grade, I had a religion teacher, and she was awesome, and I remember her telling us once that there are constantly angels and demons around us fighting for our souls, and God makes it so that we can't see that, because it would be terrifying for us. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, that's really crazy to think about, but it makes sense, because if I'm going to believe in one, I have to believe in the other.
Yeah.
You know, but it just never thought about it in that way.
Stacey, I just want to say that I am so glad that you're here to give us this perspective. Obviously, those that listen know that those of us here at Freaks and Geeks, we tend to play our beliefs a little fast and loose.
Well, that's what I love about the show.
We're a little bit eclectic. But in the paranormal field, we believe here that we believe that there's space for everybody. We like to think of investigators as students. Building knowledge is like building a house. The knowledge is just like the walls, windows, and the doors. The skills are the roof that keeps the elements at bay, and then our beliefs are our foundation. We could all stand to learn as much as we can in every facet in order to build a stronger foundation. So with that, should we get into some of the more well-known demons?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm ready. I'm going to cross myself.
Everybody ready? Everybody strapped in?
Oh, yeah. You know, babe, I got sage all up and down. You know, I've been bathing in sage. Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, well, fair enough.
In other words, he's going to stink.
He's going to smell like a hippie's van.
You got some of that incense, bro?
Pungent. Just. Okay. So our first demon of the night is the Dybbuk. So the Dybbuk is primarily found in Jewish mythology, and it actually stems from the word debak, meaning adhere or cling, and it's a malicious possessing spirit believed to be the dislocated soul of a dead person. It supposedly leaves the host body once it has accomplished its goal, sometimes after being helped. So I actually have my handy-dandy Field Guide to Demons by Carol K. Mack and Dynamac here in front of me.
I didn't even know there was a Field Guide
to
Demons.
There's so many. There's so many. There's like one.
I mean, if you're going to have a Field Guide to anything in the paranormal field, I feel like demons might be the one thing you wanted.
I think there's
even, I think you're right.
Like a book that's like Demons for Idiots.
Demons for Dummies?
Demons. I think that's even a thing. But I have this one, so this is the one that I'm getting this from. So, the Dybbuk is described as the spirit of a dead person who enters and takes utter possession of a living person. Spirit possession is quite common in Christianity. Being non-corporeal, the species is always wandering and in search of a body, ranging from swine to people. Gregory the Great wrote of a nun who ate a lettuce leaf upon which a demon happened to be invisibly perched. She had not made the sign of the cross before dining, and after the salad was possessed.
Oh my God, I'm totally praying the blessing at every meal.
Might want to check the salad. In Judaism, the cases are less common and were attributed to impersonal shidin until the Dybbuk made its appearance in the 16th century. Underlying the Dybbuk in Jewish tradition is the idea of the Gilgul, or transmigrating soul, which can be found in the 13th century mystical Jewish ideas. The Dybbuk in exorcism is always identified as the soul of a specific and recognizable person who has lived. So kind of a departure from our baseline definition of a demon, but still can cause you problems nonetheless. You heard... So the lore is from the Mesa book, or the Book of Tales, which is a collection of folklore published in 1602 and describes the very first case. A young man was possessed by a wandering spirit, a Gugul, of a dead man who drowned at sea. The man's soul had passed into a cow. The cow had gone wild and the owner sold it to a Jew. The Jew was about to slaughter the cow just as the young man passed by. The soul flew into the young man's body. Once settled in its new home, it took over the young man's will, mind, and body. The young man became its puppet. Wise men came to help. They asked, "Who are you?" And the Dybbuk spoke. He said he was drowned at sea, and since his body was not recovered, his wife was not permitted to remarry and eventually became a prostitute. That's bad luck.
Oh, man.
These events had made him miserable, but he also bore the guilt of having committed adultery when he was alive. His confessions elicited confessions from some of his listeners, into whose hearts he could see, thus acting as an agent to rectify their wrongs. He was finally persuaded to depart. After this, hundreds of tales of the Dybbuk housing itself in ordinary women and men began springing up all over Eastern Europe. The Dybbuk entries were not necessarily connected to any earlier harm or relationship, just accidents waiting to happen. At times, the possession could be traced to some slight breach of ritual or disregard of warnings about unclean spirits. Going into the water, especially the mikveh, a ritual bath, was fraught with danger. One could always come out as someone else. Several demonic women arose from the waters in these stories. The voice, gesture, and behavior of the person as Dybbuk is always strange enough to alarm intimates, family, and friends. Paradoxically, although all the action takes place within the human host, his or her mind has been erased in the takeover. So all Dybbuk tales are told, not by subjects, but witnesses to the phenomenon. The Dybbuk, a wonderful Yiddish play by the folklorist S. Enske, is a mystical love story in which the Dybbuk is not a wandering spirit, but a living scholar who literally dies for the love of a young woman when her father gives her in marriage to another man. On her wedding night, he enters her body, causing her to behave as one possessed. Well, happens to us all. A rabbi is called in and soon ascertains that this has happened because her father broke a vow to his dead friend. He had promised to give this man's son, the scholar, his daughter in marriage. A trial takes place, and the father tries to make amends, and the Dybbuk promises to leave his true love's body. But he enters her soul, and she chooses to go to the other world with him. Her destined bridegroom. The Dybbuk is not all evil, but like many demons, has an ambiguous reputation. In one Talmudic story, we meet Ben Tamalian, a unique and intriguing possession species. Once a certain rabbi named Rabbi Simeon ben Johai went to Rome to plead for clemency for his people in the wake of a series of stern decrees against them. On the road, the rabbi met a demon named Ben Tamalian, who was a Dybbuk. He introduced himself and asked the rabbi where he was going. "To Rome," the rabbi said, and he explained why. "I'll help you," said Ben Tamalian. He then told the rabbi his plan. The rabbi, with a certain ambivalence after receiving help from an unclean spirit, accepted for the greater good. As the rabbi traveled toward Rome, news came that the daughter of Caesar had been possessed by a demon and that nobody had been able to exorcise the creature. The rabbi knew that it was Ben Tamalian who had taken up residence in the princess, so he volunteered to attempt to cast out the spirit. He called him by name and, addressing him directly, bid him depart. Being identified and addressed, the spirit was forced to obey. The princess was cured. Caesar tore up the decree, and this time the demonic possession species voluntarily did a good deed, although his motives have never actually been disclosed. So, disarming dispelling techniques for Dybbuks. In each case, a Dybbuk must be expelled by a rabbi, who always addresses the indweller directly and asks his identity. After the rabbi asks several questions, he is usually able to cast it out of the victim's body. A Dybbuk traditionally exits by the toe or little finger of the inhabited person. Also, a small hole must be made in a window or other matter of egress established so that the demon will leave the house. This is always a precaution, as one does not want to trap a demon any more than an angry bee.
So, what exactly then would be a Dybbuk box? Are we talking like it comes out the toe and then you just trap it in some Tupperware?
Oh, Christopher.
Tupperware does have a really good seal.
I'm sorry, I mean...
You burp it, you burp the Dybbuk.
Hell yeah. I mean, I got some Ziploc bags that, you know, ain't no air coming out of that bitch.
So,
the Dybbuk box was first created and used by Kevin Manis to describe a wine cabinet in the item information for an eBay auction. And as the subject is of his original story describing paranormal events, which he attributed to the box. Manis, who is a writer and creative professional by trade, owned a small antiques and furniture refinishing business in Portland, Oregon at the time. According to Manis's story, he bought the box at an estate sale in 2003. It had belonged to a survivor of the Holocaust in German-occupied Poland named Hevala, who had escaped to Spain and purchased it there before her immigration to the United States. Hevala's granddaughter told Manis that the box had been bought in Spain after the Holocaust. Upon hearing this box was a family heirloom, Manis offered to give the box back to the family, but the granddaughter insisted that he take it. "We don't want it," she said. She told him that the box had been kept in her grandmother's sewing room and was never opened because a Dybbuk was said to live inside of it.
See, this is why, like, you just have to watch what you buy at estate sales and, like, antique stores. I mean, I'm just saying, you know.
Like white people problems right now.
I get everything cleansed before I open it.
You see some, like, you know, kind of box or something sitting someplace at, like, the antique mall from Williamsburg, and, like, it's been, you notice it, like, every time you go, and it's still there. Like, maybe there's a reason why.
There's Dybbuk in that box.
Yeah, I don't want that Dybbuk box.
You know, the thing is that April, that's something that April's going to buy.
That is something that I would buy. I would totally buy it.
Well, April, I will not touch it. But I will let you know where it is located, and then once it comes to your house, I'm never coming here again.
I'm burying that bitch out in the yard.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't do, like, the antique boxes. I've seen that movie. It's called The Possession. Matajahu's in it. There's a Dybbuk. No thanks.
Ugh.
Yep.
So let's get into our next demon, Lilith. Lilith is a figure in Jewish mythology, developed earliest in the Babylonian Talmud, 3rd to 5th centuries. Lilith is often envisioned as a dangerous demon of the night, who is sexually wanton, and who steals babies in the darkness. The character is generally thought to derive, in part, from a historically far earlier class of female demons, Lilitu, in ancient Mesopotamian religion, found in the cuneiform texts of Sumer, the Akkadian Empire, Assyria, and Babylonia. In Jewish folklore, from the satirical book Alphabet of Sirach, which is circa 700 to 1000 onwards, Lilith appears as Adam's first wife, who was created at the same time, Rosh Hashanah, and from the same dirt as Adam. Compares Genesis 1:27. This contrasts with Eve, who was created from one of Adam's ribs in Genesis 2:22. The legend developed extensively during the Middle Ages in the tradition of Haggadah, the Zohar, and Jewish mysticism. For example, in the 13th century writings of Isaac ben Yaakov HaKohen, Lilith left Adam after she refused to become subservient to him and then would not return to the Garden of Eden after she had coupled with the archangel Samael. Evidence in later Jewish materials is plentiful, but little information has survived relating to the original Sumerian, Akkadian, Assyrian, and Babylonian view of these demons. While the connection is almost universally agreed upon, recent scholarship has disputed the relevance of two sources previously used to connect the Jewish Lilith to an Akkadian Lilitu, the Gilgamesh Appendix and the Arslan Tash Amulet. In Hebrew language texts, the term Lilith or Lilit, translated as night creatures, night monster, night hag, or screech owl, first occurs in a list of animals in Isaiah 34:14, either in singular or plural form, according to variations in the earliest manuscripts. In the Dead Sea Scrolls 4Q 5:10-5:11, the term first occurs in a list of monsters. In Jewish magical inscriptions on bowls and amulets from the 6th century current era onwards, Lilith is identified as a female demon, and the first visual depictions appear. The resulting Lilith legend continues to serve as source material in modern Western culture, literature, occultism, fantasy, and horror. It is also said that Lilith is thought to be the demon of waste places, who originally lived in the garden of the Sumerian goddess Inanna, Queen of Heaven. She is mentioned briefly in the Sumerian story of Gilgamesh and the Hulupu tree, although it is now being questioned whether the name actually translates to Lilith.
Oh, man, we just keeping it with the Jewish demons up in here. I'm starting to get a little concerned that the Jewish faith has a good hold on a lot of these demons.
Well, I don't think it's that necessarily. I don't think that it's that there are so many Jewish demons. I think that, I mean, there are a lot of Jewish demons, I'm not going to front. But I think that being an extremely old religion, it's just something that they kind of have come by honest. And it's also like the ones that we picked tonight are just the ones that I thought people might recognize. And unfortunately, a lot of those are ones based in Judaism. So
I wonder why that is, if there's any reason for that. You know what I mean? I mean,
I don't know. I really don't.
Maybe part of it being the forerunner to Christianity. So a lot of Jewish stuff informs Christianity.
And there's a lot of overlap too. I mean, like, you know, Lilith is something that I think has a lot of popular, like there's the Lilith Festival every year.
Oh yeah, Lilith Fair.
Yeah, there's, I mean, so these ones are Dybbuk. There's movies about the Dybbuk.
I mean, Lilith to me, as Carrie was saying, kind of sounds akin to a succubus. Instead of she steals babies.
She is the queen of the incubi.
Yeah, she's also called like the mother of all demons. So she
but incubus
and
were
her,
men.
Incubus are men that seduce women. Succubus are women that seduce men.
So that would be like the antithesis of the Virgin Mary, right?
So like, why do I feel like this is like the ultimate female insult besides like, you know, using the word bitch? Like, if you call somebody a Lilith, like that's hardcore.
There's just a lady of the evening, like, who loves to get it.
Yeah, like if somebody says, okay, Lilith, I'm going to be like, what'd you just say to me?
Well, then you could be like, oh, you listened to the episode, didn't you?
Yeah, I'd be like, did you hit like? Like,
yeah. are you going to listen in? Yeah. So one of those very popular demons, another one, is Pazuzu, which I know best from Futurama.
Pazuzu!
Pazuzu! and that is Professor Farnsworth's, like, pet is Pazuzu.
His gargoyle.
Well, I think it's actually the demon, because the demon looks a lot like a gargoyle. But Pazuzu is also really well known because it is the demonic star of The Exorcist.
Oh, that movie's scary.
I have The Exorcist sitting right here for us.
Yeah, that is scary. I want to read that book, but I'm afraid to have it in my house.
Just keep it outside no matter what.
Yeah.
Well, it's sitting right here beside me.
I know, it's sitting right next to me. Oh.
You feel the heat off that bitch.
It is in a red cover.
It is in a red cover. Well, it's because somebody destroyed the outer cover, but
it was appropriate new binding.
Yeah. So, Pazuzu is really the king of the demons of the wind. He's the brother of Himbaba and the son of the god Hanbi. He also represented the southern wind, the bearer of storms and drought. Pazuzu is known for bringing famine during dry seasons and locusts during rainy seasons. Pazuzu is invoked in apotropic amulets, which combat the powers of his rival, which is the malicious goddess Lamashtu, who was believed to cause harm to mother and child during childbirth. Now, listen, we're going to flip it upside down on you right now. Everybody strap in. Although Pazuzu... Everybody strapped? We're good?
Oh, I got
ready
strapped
lift
on.
Off? Although Pazuzu is himself considered to be an evil spirit, he drives and frightens away other evil spirits, therefore protecting humans against plagues and misfortunes.
What?
I know.
Well, I mean, you're still stuck with Pazuzu, though, so don't count your chicks before they hatch.
Yeah, it's like having Cujo as your pet. Yeah. The dog, you know, it's like, oh, well, I don't have to worry about any other dogs coming around, but I've got Cujo as my pet. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's going
to
eat me at any second, but nobody else.
No other sharks are going to mess with me, but I got Jaws right here, you know.
Yeah.
So Pazuzu is mentioned in the Simon Necronomicon, a publication of Avon Books that purports to document incantations to invoke incredible beings, monsters into visible form. So that's the one you want to be afraid of if you want to be afraid of a book.
Yeah, that one's never coming in this house. I'll tell you that much.
I might already have a copy.
Shut up.
I don't have
it. It's going to be used to fuel the fire.
I mean, it's prime day, though, so you don't know what's going to happen before the night
ends.
Oh,
Lord.
He is described therein as the Lord of all fevers and plagues, grinning dark angel of the four wings, horned with rotting genitalia.
Oh, oh, Lord.
Magma. I can hear him yelling all the way up here.
I know.
And is the brother of Mwawa, which is they have delicious sandwiches.
So I have a few questions. So if
about
we
about rotting
if
genitalia?
This, no, well, there's a lot of questions that go to that. But
hey, babe.
Yeah,
hey.
No, I don't want to hear.
Hey, babe.
What?
Blue waffle.
Ah. Thanks for those nightmares.
He didn't know what one was, and so I Googled it for him, and I just slid him the phone.
Oh, sweet Jesus, it's so gross. Oh, God.
It's a lady who has a problem. For those of you who are listening, don't Google it.
Yes,
do not,
don't Google
repeat,
it.
Do not Google it.
And if you're going to Google it, don't Google it at work.
It's not safe for work.
NSFW.
It is a woman who just needs to be seen by a doctor very badly. She can.
It's a demon in of itself. There's a demon entity in that bitch.
Could be.
So, taking it back to Christianity here. So the four horsemen of the apocalypse, would those be considered demons?
No. No, because the four horsemen of the apocalypse are what, like pestilence and hold on, we're gonna look it up.
Pestilence, famine, war and death.
No, those are things. Those aren't demons.
But yes, but they're portrayed as like as being an entity, coming from an entity.
Yeah, they're not portrayed as demons. They're just beings.
Literally the third Google search.
I mean, is that crazy to think that, like, that could be an interpretation?
No, I don't think it's crazy to think that they could be an interpretation, except death. And if you watch Supernatural, then they're all demons except for death.
So what is death, then?
Death is not a demon. Death is, like, a function. We
death
actually just had
reaper.
This conversation.
Yeah.
Well, there's a fun piece of knowledge. Okay, so
they're harbingers of the last judgment. So they're the bringers of these things, but that doesn't mean that they're demons. And furthermore, just as we just saw with Pazuzu, just because something is a demon doesn't mean that they don't have redeeming qualities. Well, I don't want to say redeeming, but they don't have.
You know, he kills people, but he's got a nice smile.
Well, yeah. Oh, he has good teeth.
Yeah. He's got a great ass.
I would say that
of the four.
So I would put death and the four horsemen in the same category because all of them are harbingers. They're bringers of something.
I learn something new every day.
Death has a function.
Right.
So back to yield Pazuzu. So is Pazuzu the same as Zozo, you know, the big bad demon?
Pazuzu is not the same as Zozo. So some people think it is and some people don't. I don't think it is. So it's really kind of murky Pazuzu also shows up in Futurama, I already said, as Professor Farnsworth. So I don't think that that's something that Zozo would do, because Zozo is just terrifying.
They just don't want to invoke Zozo.
Yeah, who, I don't. What it? Who is
we're
Zozo?
About to, we're about to get into Zozo.
Oh,
Chris,
yeah.
Am I gonna have nightmares?
Oh, we going...
Yeah, Chris is about to face his fears right now. Chris has
yeah.
been terrified.
Zozo
of Zozo
is
for
Zozo's
years.
The one I just always immediately assume that it is. You know. So Zozo is first mentioned in a work by Colin D. Plancy, who lived from 1793 to 1887, called The Dictionnaire Infernal, published in 1918. In it, the author describes the case of possession in Picardy, a girl who claimed to be harassed by three evil spirits, one being Zozo, Mimi, and then Crapulet. In several testimonies, we can find three characters, but very often, and even if the three are present, it is Zozo who makes contact. Despite a name that is not reminiscent of a demon, it remains dangerous because it can remain hooked for years to a victim, even going to take a participant. Ooh, I just spit all over my screen. take a participant in the session or talk to them to make them go crazy. According to numerous testimonies, the demon Zozo clearly shows attraction towards the female person. So, you know, make sure you're blessed. Zozo is also attracted to people with suicidal tendencies, depression, and other psychological disorders. In addition, all quote-unquote fragile people are all the more concerned with the danger of this Zozo. In the United States, Zozo is taken very seriously, and there are even specialists called Zozoologists. I did not know that, and I can't imagine that it pays very well.
Probably doesn't pay at all.
I wonder what you have to do to become a Zozoologist. Just be like, I believe in Zozo. I can cure you.
You gotta listen to a lot of Zeppelin.
Yeah. Just smoking a lot of, you know, hog's legs. I can see Zozo.
What?
All right.
That hog's leg.
Yeah, you know, that cush. So here is the short testimony of Darren, an American fan of the experience Ouija. Today, I refuse to even pronounce his name because I think it could bring him to manifest himself. I cannot count the times he pretended to be a nice guy, pretending to be the person I was trying to contact with the board, but after a while ended up showing his true identity, threatening me, insulting me and the other participants. Once he even used words in Latin or Hebrew, using biblical terminology. How to know if he is present? You might be asking yourself. Like many demons, Zozo usually makes his presence known. And here are some warning signs that may indicate that you are experiencing Zozo being inside you right now. So Zozo can introduce himself by specifying his name, going several times, you know, Zozo, 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 which just might, you know, just be a little weird at first. Or using one of the similar names mentioned above. Fast movements. So if you use the Ouija board, the droplet, planchette, can begin to move very quickly. Feelings of discomfort. You may feel a feeling of fear, uneasy rise in you, although that just might be something you ate. Darkness. You can see shadows move, or the room you're in can become colder than it normally would. If you experience any of these symptoms, please contact your local Zozoologist. If you think Zozo is with you, do not panic, but take steps to end the connection to avoid any bodily injury and or mental harm. You need to quickly cut the connection. Or if Zozo is in contact with you, you take the following steps to protect yourself and stop your discussion. Why did you give me all this? I sound like a goddamn medicine commercial. You might experience these side effects.
diarrhea, vomiting, impotence.
Impotence and erections lasting more than 4 hours.
So gives you erections lasting longer than 4 hours. I'm just trying to help you out here, man. Go use it.
This is why I don't mess with Ouija boards. Like, I just don't.
Well, if Zozo's giving you erections longer than 4 hours, you may need to go see a doctor.
No, I mean, like, just in general. How would anybody... I don't play with Ouija boards. Nope.
No. See, too many bad things.
Many bad things.
Yeah. If Zozo is in contact with you, take the following steps to protect yourself and stop your discussion with this asshole. Stay calm. That is number one. Demons and evil spirits feed on fear. So take breaths, stabilize yourself, meditate, go to your happy place, do whatever it is that makes you feel good.
Christopher, sweet
what?
Christ, just read the things.
Oh, I'm reading it. I'm just adding some pizzazz to it. You know what I'm saying?
God bless.
So close the session quickly and correctly. If you play with Ouija boards, move the clipboard to say goodbye and close the game formally, even if Zozo tries to continue the discussion. If you use another contact method, cut off the communication immediately. Do not mention his... Oh, great. Don't mention his name. That's great. Thanks, babe.
You just repeated it over and over and over again.
Yeah. God. I'm sleeping on the couch.
Okay, do it by yourself then.
Yeah, that's probably not the best choice.
Using his name gives him power. Avoid talking about him, let alone using his name. Well,
okay, looks like we're all gonna have to stay together then.
I've completely fucked this up. Find help. If you feel that you are he who shall not be named, or he is seek help from a paranormal professional or a religious leader or a zoologist.
Oh, Christopher. Well, so here's the interesting thing about that. And when I was preparing for this show, I was doing some research and I was, pulling stuff up out of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And, you inevitably look up exorcism when you're talking about demons. So this whole thing about paranormal professionals and, it's what was he said about suicidal tendencies and depression and psychological disorders. Listen to this. So when the Catholic Church asks publicly and authoritatively in the name of Jesus Christ that a person or object be protected against the power of the evil one and withdrawn from his dominion, it is called exorcism. Jesus performed exorcisms, and from him the church has received the power and an office of exorcising. In a simple form, exorcism is performed at the celebration of baptism. The solemn exorcism, called a major exorcism, can be performed only by a priest and with the permission of the bishop. The priest must proceed with prudence, strictly observing the rules established by the church. Exorcism is directed at the expulsion of demons or to the liberation from demonic possession through the spiritual authority which Jesus entrusted to his church. But now here's the kicker. Illness, especially psychological illness, is a very different matter. Treating this is the concern of medical science. Therefore, before an exorcism is performed, it is important to ascertain that one is dealing with the presence of the evil one and not an illness. So what do you do in this case?
I think that we talked about before was that demons can influence man, right?
Right.
So demons can't make man do anything. They can influence him to do bad things. So I think that those suicidal thoughts, and there's also, all right.
I think Zozo's inside a ghost right now. I'm just
ghost
saying.
Ghost is attacking. We don't need to worry because we got a ghost. But I think that. So there was a portion of this where we were talking about how – God, I've lost my train of thought completely. But so demons can only influence whatever is already inside the mind of someone else, right?
Right.
So that's why the church will tell you to be cautious and, your thoughts and, don't watch – torture porn and stuff like that. Just don't do stuff like that. Not only because it's just not good for anything, but it's just I mean, if you're into that, that's cool. Man. But like the theory is that a demon.
That's
can
a rocky road you're going down
head.
There, babe.
But I see what you're saying. But I guess the point I'm trying to get at here is that if it's already somebody that's dealing with some psychological issues.
What if they were brought on by the demon, though?
Well, no. Well, okay. Let's just say that they have psychological issues, so it's making them more susceptible. To
yes, okay, I'm with you.
The demon that shall be not be named. So then that person then seeking out assistance, you know, it's already, you know, kind of taboo in essence. So, you know, seeking out assistance when you're plagued by, say, this sort of possession, and you already have sort of this history of having, you know, psychological illness, things like that. I mean, I could see where that could be extremely scary for somebody could be experiencing that, because if you do seek out the help of a religious leader, you know, they're going to look, I would think. I mean, I don't know the Roman ritual. I mean, I don't know how that's prepared for. But I mean, I would think that there would be some sort of investigation of some sort. And then if it comes to fruition that, hey, this person has psychological issues and whatnot, you know, what is the tendency where, you know, I would hope that maybe it wouldn't be very quick to say, hey, okay, you know.
You got demons in you, boy.
Yeah, well, I know that it wouldn't be just a, hey, you know, you're schizophrenic.
Yeah.
You know, you need to get medication.
I find it interesting,
you know, I mean,
that you mentioned.
So you see that fine line there between the psychological disorder and this sort of phenomenon.
Right.
You know, it's very interesting
find,
and intriguing.
For sure.
From
I
that
think,
sort of, you know, catechism, Roman Catholic sort of perspective where you're,
yeah,
where you're following, you know, the law of the church and the doctrine as to how you would treat those situations.
Yeah.
I think one thing that's interesting is that you mentioned the Catholic Church says to, like, you ghost, like feeling like, you know, suicidal thoughts or stuff like that, that's of a mental illness, like go seek like medical help. But like the one thing that we've that is always taught, like, you know, and stuff like that, it's like if you're feeling that kind of stuff, go see the chaplain.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
So I wonder if that's just one of the things that's like one of the differences between the different sort of sects of Christianity.
I don't know.
I mean, I think talking to your whoever you know your religious faith is based in is always a good idea when you have situations like that.
Well, right, and I think what this is trying to say is that, you know, when somebody comes to you with psychological issues, you know, don't, you know, or if you see somebody's having issues, you don't automatically assume that they're, you know, they need an exorcism. You know, you have to do your due diligence.
Right.
And make sure that it's not something else.
Right.
I think a big thing is maybe just allowing people to talk.
Yeah, for sure.
Talking makes you feel better in general. Maybe that's it.
Well, wow, guys. This episode has absolutely flown by. We have so much more
content. Oh, my goodness.
That we should have gotten to. But you know what? We have 30 seconds left. So with that, I want to give a big thank you to Stacey. Again, thank you so much. You have added some really rich content to this conversation. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely glad to have you back on. Yeah, I don't know what you said. I can't hear you.
We need her back on.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, I think we do. Yeah, for sure. All right, guys. Well, head on over to Freaks and Geeks Facebook page. We might try and cut this up for you and post it. Otherwise, have a good week, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Peace out.
That's it. Done. Jesus Christ. That was God.